return to the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. If any of you have gone down to the beach in the last few weeks, actually, you may have seen some people protesting about the beach being closed and setting up their own little encampment on the beach with signs and placards and wanting to talk to you about why they're there. So we were down there, check it out, and we have them on the line right now to tell us about their plans and what's going on with the beaches and why they want to push it faster than what our officials want it to be. So on the line, we have David Rodriguez for the Committee to Reopen Santa Cruz.
Yes.
He calls the corona pandemic a plandemic. And I believe that you think it's kind of a hoax against humanity, according to what I've read about this. Is that right, David?
No? Yes, I've seen, there's something called Event 201. It happened last fall where the heads of many federal agencies got together and said, what would we do if there was a pandemic? And so that's one of the foreshadowing exercises that have occurred that has led me to believe that this is definitely planned and there's ulterior motives for humanity.
Okay. And also on the line, we have Howard Lichtman, who has been...
A.K.A. Etienne de la Beauté 2.
Well, I'll let you say that, Howard, in the proper pronunciation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I under the nom de plume of Etienne de la Beauté Squared, where I'm the author of a book called Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed. And I'm also the author of an article entitled Plandemic, How Organized Crime Interests on Wall Street, in the Government, and in the Media engineered COVID to steal trillions. And essentially my main thesis is that the bailouts, the multi-trillion dollar bailout, COVID is the engineered excuse for multi-trillion dollar bailouts. So now we're in the process of handing trillions of dollars to Wall Street, to private companies, to private banks.
So this is a ploy for some big boys clubs to take over, in a sense. So
my thesis is that, you know, intergenerational organized crime has been using government to rob and enslave the population in a kind of tax slavery, where trillions of dollars are being kind of handed out the back end to cartel companies for quote-unquote bailouts and quote-unquote stimulus and unnecessary warfare, unnecessary, you know, domestic terrorism spending. The Pentagon is missing $10 to $20 trillion. They claim they lost $6 billion in physical cash in Iraq, in Afghanistan. You've got the Fat Leonard scandal.
I think one of the things that we saw on the beach is we were talking about how you saw the governments itself as parasitic. The government is a virus in that context.
So I'm a voluntarist, and David is a voluntarist who runs Santa Cruz voluntarist, and we don't believe that government is legitimate or desirable or necessary, and the world is a self-organizing place. It produces spontaneous order, and really everything the government provides as a monopoly provider of services, whether that those services are air traffic control or the roads or the courts, could be better provided through the free market, through entrepreneurs, through charities. And so everything the government does that's non-redistributive could be privatized. And instead of the monopoly police, you would have a choice between different protection companies. And when they show up, they would only protect life, liberty, and property. They wouldn't be arresting you for smoking a plant or for gambling or for any of the other victimless crimes that the police do. They wouldn't be able to use violence on you because you don't have the ability to use violence on your neighbors. And so if you don't have the ability to use violence on your neighbors, then you can't delegate a right you do not have yourself to a representative, to a government. And so this idea of voluntarism is really the next evolution in kind of political thought, and it's really the only ism that is fair for everyone. And so nobody gets the ring of power, nobody gets to use violence or coercion on anyone else.
What about the comparison to anarchy? Is there much of a difference?
I covered in my book, The Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed, where I kind of show it. So it's the government and the media working together, and they've taken the word anarchy, which means no rulers, doesn't mean no rules. It just means the word, it means no rulers. And so my thesis is the rulers want the population to know there's an option on the menu called no rulers. So they've used their media propaganda system to take the word for no rulers and make it mean chaos and dystopia, which you know they've changed it over time through even control of the dictionary.
Uh-huh.
And so the idea that you know the world is this self-organizing place that produces spontaneous order, it has been hidden from society, it has been denigrated, but it is the thing that leads to harmony and prosperity for all. It is the thing that makes war go away. It is the thing that restores economic growth and development to the economy. When you get rid of government's monopoly privileges, when you get rid of their misallocation of capital, when you get rid of their confiscatory confiscation, when you go back to market-based hard money,
that's okay, well, it's a
prosperity.
Yeah, it's a big topic to reframe what government is or even if it's necessary. But what I like to focus in on the show is a little bit this connection with the pandemic and look at what's realistic here. I mean, did you believe that the virus is real, for example?
Well, here, let me give you guys some current numbers, okay? Like today's report on the internet says in Santa Cruz County, we're currently passing the reopening tests and we have a total of 21.6 people in the county who are sick. There have been 8 new cases reported Monday. Basically, what do we do about the fact that the virus is real, but perhaps our response to it is distorted?
Well, is that what you believe? And do you believe it's real, for starters?
Yeah, so there appears to be some type of virus out there, and we're not saying that people haven't been harmed or been death caused by it, but the response by the county, specifically the governor and even at the federal level, has violated their oaths to the Constitution. These are sworn officers, and they have violated that. So as humans, I want to remind everyone, yourself, you have natural rights to life, liberty, and property from nature or God or evolution, whatever you believe, but you're born with these rights. These are something that you can't, nobody gives them to you. So that's the essence of it, and that these governments are actually shutting down businesses that violate their natural rights. And so even if there was very deadly flu or virus, they don't have the authority, legal, lawful authority, to shut down businesses. And so this is why, as a member of the committee here, we are saving lives by helping businesses get back to work, because we're talking about livelihood, food on the table for children. And if people are concerned about this virus, we recommend them stay home and do whatever self-protection mechanisms that they want to. But if people don't believe in the lethality of the virus, we recommend they get off the front.
Can you hold on a second? We got to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. And we also want to introduce you to our third guest,
Ellie Black,
okay, who will be online as well. Thank you, David and
Howard. We'll be back.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Okay, we've got David Rodriguez and Howard Lichtman and
Ellie Black.
And Ellie Black on. Ellie Black, do you want to introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, hi there. This is Ellie Black, born and raised in Santa Cruz and longtime activist. And I'm here purely as a representative for the Committee to Reopen Santa Cruz to Save Lives.
Okay.
I do also agree with basically the volunteerist principles, and I absolutely love Howard's book. But I'm purely here to talk about Reopen Santa Cruz and what we're doing. We are going to have our 5th beach day, which is a peaceful civil disobedience action.
Mm.
We've gone to Cowles Beach every week. We've had four other times, and it's always been a wonderful event, family friendly. There's always been families with kids with us in our group. And, you know, we started out with a small group of about 20 people when we first started this whole thing a month ago, and has grown now into our Facebook page has almost 400 members in it. And then we've got tons of people who aren't even on the internet and aren't involved with us. So I would like to invite everyone who's listening to check out our beach day number 5. That'll be this Saturday, May 30th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Cowles Beach. It will be peaceful civil disobedience, because the time we're supposed to enter the beach is 5. We'll be entering at 3. And we're also going to be basically sunbathing and talking and hanging out with people, which are also not allowed, supposedly, according to these.
Yeah, from what I've seen, I attended one of them. I noticed that there are quite a few people that were coming to the beach, but not necessarily sitting with you, but sitting on their own blankets not too far away, letting you take the heat if it should happen. But they were willing to...
And I went down the beach after the first time the police had asked us to leave. Went down. It turns out a lot of those groups actually were there for our, you know, because they'd heard about us and were there for our group. So that was really, really cool. I do want to mention to anybody who might be wanting to attend the event on Saturday that this is a non-partisan, non-political event. Mm. So we're asking people to bring your towels and frisbees, musical instruments, but leave the flags and political stuff home. And you want to remind us that it's family friendly, and we are please do not bring alcohol.
Are you keeping track of how the regulations are changing with the county? Because I understand there's supposed to be some regulations relaxed this evening at midnight. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so they're changing on a daily basis. Uh-huh. And our whole premise is that we are going to keep working on this until we get all of our freedoms back. I do want to say that if we reopen Santa Cruz, if I could just read our mission statement really quickly, because it's really important.
Sure.
I want the listeners to understand that
the
we're
mission
not
statement.
A group of
to reopen Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
The committee to reopen Santa Cruz to save lives.
Okay.
The mission statement is to wisely and safely reopen businesses, beaches, and parks in Santa Cruz County via peaceful and voluntary solutions using the most current health information available to reduce risk in our communities. Should that information change, our mission may change accordingly. So I want the public and the listeners to understand that we're not a group of people who are trying to do something that is going to endanger our community. In fact, the opposite. We're keeping an eye. If it looks like large numbers of people are getting sick, of course, we'll have to dial back.
But I'd like to mention, because one of the other things that we did very early on over a month ago is we began going to the hospitals and visiting the hospitals to see if there was a pandemic going on. And what we discovered over a month ago, visiting Santa Clara Valley Memorial, which was supposed to be the epicenter of COVID in California, and finding nothing. We visited Dominican. We found absolutely nothing. There is no pandemic. There has not been a pandemic going on for over a month. And for keeping these businesses closed, this is starting to smell less like a response to a real health emergency, and it's starting to smell more like economic warfare against the entrepreneurs and artists and business owners and small mom and pop.
So what you're saying is that the curve, if there was one, has been flattened, and it's been flattened for a while.
So yes.
It must be other special interests that are trying to play this game.
Without a doubt. And when we say that it's been flattened, it's been flat as a pancake for over a month. And that's the government's own numbers. That's Santa Clara's own numbers. We're talking about test kits that have notoriously high as 80% false positive rates.
Well, and not only that.
Yeah, economic incentives for the hospitals to classify victims as COVID. And so there's all of these very suspicious either examples of foreknowledge or policy decisions that are pumping up the numbers on a national and an international basis. And that's why we suspect that this is something other than a real health emergency.
Some kind of big power play.
So I want to take the conversation a little bit of a different direction, which is the need for there to be a community conversation and community feedback and community buy-in before these kinds of draconian measures are imposed. Because the biggest problem that I see is that we have an invisible minority of decision makers thrusting a decision out on the populace without any rationale, without any due process. And the burden of that decision is being borne by hundreds of thousands of people in our county who did not get to be any part of that decision. And so that's where I want to bring the conversation, is how do we make that conversation happen?
So that really is the problem with government, is that people who you may not have voted for, being elected by a small minority of the population, the winner is not representing the people that don't vote, don't believe in government, do not believe that there should be a government at all. And those people then get to force their will on the entire population, and that leads to these kind of negative consequences. And so, you know, the ability for a small group of people to shut down the entire economy in Santa Cruz is now provable lies, misrepresentations, fraud, pandemic models, media hype, like 100% media hype. I mean, this is why we're trying to evolve away from government, expose its illegitimacy, its criminality, and really, you know, trying to explain to people that, you know, you don't need government. It's been a scam since the beginning, and everything that you want out of life could be provided by nonprofits, by mutual aid societies, by the free market, or it shouldn't be done at all. And that is what would bring peace and prosperity and economic progress, and it would eliminate the madness of things like the coronavirus or handing trillions of dollars to Wall Street and quote-unquote stimulus and bailouts.
One additional point is just that the simplicity of the ideas are solid. As you can tell, ATN is very, you know, knowledgeable about the details and how it's all worked out, because we've been thinking about it and writing about it for years. But for new listeners, all we're discussing here is voluntary relationship.
Real freedom.
Nobody's allowed to use coercion in our private lives. However, we've taught to the coercive schools and coercive agencies that somehow when you wear a uniform and put a shiny badge on, you have special rights or powers. And this is not to say that all cops or all people in government are bad. You know, my family works in government. You know, I love my family and they're good humans. But this has been a systemized institution of coercion, and it goes back to the money system, the school system, the media regulators, all these different organizations. Anybody or any organization that uses coercion, by definition, is immoral and are actually committing crimes. And so this is what we say with the Santa Cruz Voluntarists, is that free people don't ask for permission to be free. We exercise our freedom. And this is what we're encouraging everyone to come out to on Saturday at 3 p.m. because now you can be together with other people in peace and in obedience to their own truth, their own inner knowledge of you are a human and you have a right to live. You have a right to be free. So in terms of how to open up, is we really just got to open up. We've spoken to a dozen business owners. They're willing to open up, but they're afraid of the county, the DA, and these.
Well, yeah, and also maybe there might be something to be afraid of the virus, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I mean, would you object to people coming to your event and wearing masks?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
However they want to come.
Yeah, we believe in freedom, and the main essence is that this is nonpartisan. This is non-political. This is human rights. This is human dignity to the depths. Who has the ability to force down or close different businesses? So yeah, some people do come with masks. Some people are legitimately afraid. Hey, you're afraid? Not a problem. Come and, you know, wear a mask. But we're saying freedom is the issue, and these agencies are overstepping their constitutional right if they had one. And any mask they can have wear is totally up to them.
Is there any medical emergency that should supersede constitutional rights?
No.
No, because it's not even
Ebola.
That's no law, right? Not even the constitutional rights. The Constitution is only supposed to guarantee your natural law rights. You, as a sovereign individual that owns your own body, it's your body. You have the right to peacefully assemble it with other people. You have the right to do whatever you really want in life as long as you are not hurting somebody else. The definition of a right is anything that is not a wrong.
I'd like to jump in and just respond to the question about attendees wearing masks. And yeah, as the person who handles the people who join our group via social media, I actually get a lot of folks who are very questioning. They don't really know. They feel like things don't feel right, but they're still questioning. And I just want to really put it out there that we do everything we can to be as inclusive and unifying in everything that we do, and we don't tolerate making fun of people or negatively referring to things when somebody maybe doesn't have all of the information, because we are all learning things every day. I learn new things every day, and so I'd like to encourage anybody who's interested in learning more to come. You can wear a mask, you can wear a hazmat suit, it doesn't matter. Bring, just come join us. Come join us.
All right, we're going to be back after the break.
Yes, we're talking to the members of the committee to reopen Santa Cruz, and back after the news.
And callers, hang on. You can ask people questions
after this break. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We have the organizers of the Committee to Reopen Santa Cruz, a group founded recently here in Santa Cruz to open up the town. And we have a few callers. Are you folks open to talking to the public?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Okay. Okay, so let's bring in our caller, Mrs. Future.
All right. Hi, John in Santa Cruz. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Great show as always.
Thank you, John. You have a question for us?
I do have a question that I could take off air, but I do have a very specific question for the gentleman who wrote the book. Sort of a general question off the air. It really seems like we're on an extreme one side of three different topics here with these three folks on the line, and I'm not going to be able to change anybody's mind with regards to this. But here's my question. So ask the question, what about the greater good? And you started to hint that with, is there a pandemic for which the greater good would prevail here?
Yes.
Because I get a feeling that on that side of the argument, man, if you take someone's rights away, their right to literally walk on the sidewalk, you know, there's no greater good. Now, with that said, I'll take that off air. Here's my question for the gentleman that wrote the book. Now, with everything we know, with all the stimulus money and the Federal Reserve printing money, so on and so forth, there's absolutely a paper trail for every single penny that gets printed. But the way you paint the picture with regards to this, the money and the printing, you sort of take this broad brush and just dip it in paint and throw it on the wall that all government's bad. I'd love you to give something very specific in this pandemic for which money has been stolen. Because I'll tell you what, I haven't heard of that. And knowing the financial markets, that just doesn't happen without somebody knowing, right? So that's my question there. I'd love to take that.
Sure.
Love to take that.
All right, John. Thanks. So
thank you. Thank you for the call. I'll take it off air. Thanks, guys. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess that's to you, Etienne.
Sure. Absolutely. So, my thesis, it just is to be clear, is that there's an organized crime element within the government and the media in league with Wall Street. They had a desire for trillions and trillions of dollars to be handed to them in quote unquote bailouts and stimulus. And they engineered a pandemic. They spent billions to make trillions. And that pandemic is arguably not a pandemic. And so the media created the specter of a pandemic. They used ridiculous models that have been forecasts of disease and death that never materialized. They did hoaxes in certain hospitals in New York City to make it seem worse than it was. And then based on that media campaign, they then put forth bailouts and a stimulus program that is now handing trillions of dollars to private banks, private companies through what is essentially the TARP, Troubled Asset Recovery Program, the TALF, Troubled Asset Lending Facility. Now they're buying corporate paper, commercial paper, using a company called BlackRock Capital, where the Fed and the Treasury have awarded them a contract to both be rewarded by engaging in the trades that purchase mortgage-backed securities or commercial paper or whatever, and then they're handing BlackRock Capital fees to manage these special purpose vehicles that are buying the corporate paper. They're also purely monetizing the debt, so the organized crime system has been borrowing money on our behalf, selling treasury notes, treasury bonds. And that those bonds, I don't think people were actually coming to the treasury markets. I think they were doing straw purchases. Now they're getting the opportunity to purely monetize the debt, where the Fed is showing up openly, even though it's against the law for the Fed to purchase bonds at the auctions. Now, because of the pandemic, now the Fed gets to buy treasury bonds, bills, and notes at the auctions to be able to allow them to keep borrowing money and handing it out the back door to their friends. And also, when they create this money out of thin air, and we're now looking at north of $5 to $6 trillion that has either already been authorized or is being proposed, you know, right now, the trillions of dollars that the Fed and the Treasury are going to create out of thin air, that is inflationary. So that is going to steal the purchasing power out of the dollars that have been earned and saved by your friends and your neighbors and yourself. It's the same process as if they stuck their hand in your pocket and stole your money. They're just sticking their hand in your pocket and stealing the value out of the money by allowing private banks, private companies, and the Fed to create trillions and trillions of dollars, even though it's inflationary. So those brand new dollars, they are now going to compete in the market and begin to bid up prices, and you're going to pay for these stimulus in higher prices for the good, the luxuries and necessities of life. And that's a part of the theft as well, is the theft of your purchasing power in a process that is absolutely inflationary and most Americans don't understand because their mandatory government school isn't going to explain it to them.
Now, isn't this a global thing, though? It's not just the U.S. that's involved? Or you're talking about a redefinition of the global economy?
What I'm saying is that there's been internationally organized, intergenerational organized crime in all of these countries running government. Think of government as a technique. Don't think it was never designed to protect life, liberty, and property. It was always designed to rob and enslave, and they're running government on their populations. The Chinese government and the U.S. government, I believe they're in on it at the top. That's why the head of the Chinese CDC was at Event 201 that David mentioned. That's why they located the world military game on so they could spread a nasty little virus and then take it back to everybody's little home countries. They're stealing money from the population. They're handing it to themselves and their cadres and government. And it's an international problem.
Okay, yes, indeed, international. We have another caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. All right, thanks for all that. That's very interesting to think about, a little above
a lot to unpack, but
yeah, it's
could do,
a little outside of what we can go further into here,
we
but thanks
know Robert
for your
Anton,
explanation.
Robert Anton Wilson here, he wrote the Illuminati trilogy, which might have some relevance to this.
All right, so we are going to talk to Don in Salinas. Hi,
yes.
Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, before I get to my subject, I wanted to address that last caller. He was talking about the greater good.
Yes.
My take on it is when someone starts talking about the greater good, I run the other way. Because
you're not them, huh? Their hand is going to be in your pocket any minute.
Well, no, not your pocket, your heart. There's been more people murdered in the name of the greater good than in all the wars in history. The greater good of Nazi Germany, the greater good of socialist Russia, the greater good of communist China, the greater good for Pol Pot. It's all been the greater good in the name that they murder people under. And so greater good sucks to me.
But what's better?
On the subject, I'm hoping we can realize that the state of California has taken over the means of production. They absolutely control it now. We are under socialism, the real socialism. They are picking winners and losers. There is no inherent fairness to it. Elon Musk told them, open my plant or I'm going to Texas. They opened his plant. But Joe Schmo, ice cream shop in Santa Cruz, wants to open up and sell ice cream. Oh, you're going to kill somebody. This is what's going on. And then if you say the state's being unfair, the state says, oh, no, we're just putting out recommendations and the county's enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're chasing your tail trying to fight these people. It's a very unfair, very underhanded, unconstitutional. This is not right. This is absolutely not right, what's going on.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, you're preaching to the choir here, Don.
The tough boxing Carmel that's trying to just serve food, they want to throw him in jail. They actually put in front of the judge, he's dealing in unfair competition with the others because the other ones are all closed. They actually said that.
Hmm. Wow.
In front of a judge.
Well, it's very interesting if they're talking about unfair competition. What about unfair competition just to stay in business? And the fact that anybody who's sick, anybody who's working for the healthcare industry, or anybody who's a big box store selling delivered products gets to be a winner, and anybody else gets to be a loser.
Well, let me put this bug in your head about socialism. Socialism hates small business, because it's hard to tax them. They don't get as much bang for their buck. They like big business that they control and that they get their cut out of. And that's why they're trying to kill off the small business here. They don't want small business. They like big business. They talk like they hate corporations and they hate... No, they don't. They are a corporation. Socialism is a corporation. And they love other corporations because then they can get an even percentage of the cut of whatever they make and do. They can control all of the people in it. One of the things, if you're selling something to a warehouse, is I'm going to lower your SKUs. I'm going to lower the amount of numbers you have to go through to do inventory. And they love that, because then when they're doing inventory, it doesn't take them 2 or 3 days. It takes them 1 day. Same thing with socialism. They want as few people, as few corporations to tax as possible, because then they have their hands around it.
So you would agree with our guests in many respects. Would you say there's an agenda to take down small business?
Yes, there's an agenda to take down small business, because it's an agenda to take down small business. It's an agenda to get rid of cash, because socialism hates cash. You can't keep track of cash, but you can keep track of credits. Oh, yeah, you can keep track of credits real easily.
What do you think, guests? Do you agree?
I want to just say that second caller was very smart, talking about the greater good, and we are concerned about the minority groups, the underserved and underprivileged, and this is the individual. The individual is the one who gets their rights violated and gets their money stolen, and so that's what is the biggest risk, is that, you know, these greater, large corporations, they can weather the storm, but Joe Schmo Ice Cream, as you said, he's hurting, and he's probably out of business. I think the numbers I saw was 36 million unemployed in the last 2.5, 3 months. This is why I want you to come out on Saturday at 3 p.m. and help you exercise your freedom with other individuals who can get back to work. Hell's Beach.
All right. Okay, thanks, good. David. We've got to go to a break. Thanks, Don. Thanks, everybody.
We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We were talking to members of the committee to reopen Santa Cruz. They've been contacting local businesses and offering beach parties to talk about the issues that confront us all.
Yes, talking about exercising our rights in a way where our freedoms are our rights, and we don't need to invoke the police to use violence to keep us from them. We just need to exercise our rights. And let's go to another caller, guys. Michael in Santa Cruz.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here. My name is Michael. I just wanted to bring attention to the vaccine issue. So Moderna has gone to phase one clinical trials.
Yes.
With their COVID-19 vaccine. And what people need to understand is a few things. Number one, vaccine manufacturers have no liability. You cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer if you are killed or injured from a vaccine. That was the socialized medicine that was created in 1986, created total legal immunity for all vaccine manufacturers. That's the first thing. The second thing you need to understand is simply that the COVID-19 vaccine contains an aborted human fetal cell line known as the HEK-293. That is the human embryonic kidney culture cell line that they've been using since 1977. We know from the research of Corvelva in Italy, this is an organization that has done extensive research on the actual ingredients found in batches of vaccines. We know that they have discovered and published recently on hexavalent and quadrivalent vaccines that the vaccines that are running through Italy don't contain the antigens that they're supposed to contain, and actually contain horse and mouse retroviruses, as well as other types of different animal tissues.
Yeah, you know, I've heard these arguments before. But well, do you have
a
question?
These aren't arguments. They're actually facts.
Yeah, and well, it's anti-vax stuff, right? I mean,
no, it's not anti-vax stuff. It's scientific information. I'm presenting that you can go and you can read about this online.
Yeah, you know, I've heard it from anti-vax friends.
So
that's
what
all
we're
saying.
Wanting to talk about, Michael.
But I do
thank
have a question
you.
For our
thank
audience.
You.
We have
there's definitely a relationship between.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Do you guys think that aborted human fetal cell tissue is potentially dangerous to human health?
So, what do you say, folks?
You, yeah. You touch that one?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it causes tumors, and it's unnatural for the body to have foreign DNA injected into it. And so there's even talks that of depopulation long-term. Bill Gates behind this stuff. This is some of the larger picture that you want to take a look at. What's in these vaccines? And if it's really helping people, you know, why is it going to be mandatory and forced and violate your natural human rights? So, yeah, the aborted fetal cell, that's not going to be something good to inject into your bloodstream and then have the adjuvants that cross the blood-brain barrier and leave things in your brain and the brains of your children.
It's not just the fetal cells. There's also adjuvants, including mercury in the form of a preservative called thimerosal. There's hydroxide, aluminum phosphate. There's polysorbate 80. There is a great number of things in vaccines that are negative and injurious to health. And there's open talk about this being forced on the population and people having to get a COVID ID to prove that they've been vaccinated to be able to use, you know, public transportation and fly on airplanes. So this is very, very scary stuff that the government is talking about. And if they can't get rid of the flu or the common cold, the idea that they're going to rush a vaccine to market and be able to get rid of COVID is just ridiculously, patently absurd on its face. And I don't trust any of the people that are involved with this. Bill Gates and vaccines have injured millions.
Yeah, so the whole idea of pushing a vaccine is an agenda in and of itself.
And obviously a very distinct violation of the very rights that we're talking about, that in this case, we're just talking about our right to be the general public and use our public beaches without being restricted from an edict that was created behind closed door by a non-elected official appointed at the county level and without any due process or public input. And that we actually probably could come up with something that was smarter and more appropriate to deal with the real threat if there was any desire on the part of those who think that they're in charge to engage the public. Like, we're a pretty smart public. So really the conversation is about the rights that we all exercise in a democratic situation and how that process can be facilitated instead of violated.
Hmm. Correct. And it's less about the vaccine, like, ingredients, because, like, we're not necessarily all anti-vax. It's, like, violating your civil liberties, your God-given rights. I mean, this is the significant issue. You know, if you believe in vaccines, great, get vaccines. But don't force me or force me to put it into my children or force me to get into a travel passport, as ATN's mentioned. I saw that the Delta CEO was talking about something called immunity passports, where you have to get these vaccines in order to travel. And this is a diabolical plan. I hope everybody realizes what's at stake right here. It's your freedom and your grandkids' freedom. It's very serious.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we are. We're opportunistic monkeys. We're very opportunistic monkeys, and everyone's going to jump on whatever they can to take advantage of this.
All right. Seems
to me. Here, we've got a couple more callers.
Yeah,
you ready?
Thank you for that, right. Michael. And Andrea in Royal Oaks, welcome to the show.
Hello, this is Andres. Two quick comments. Number one, I think these guys should all have a show sometime on KSEO where they just talk about volunteerism
sure. As
a concept. And second, when you talk about the greater good, the reason why I am not afraid of it is because I believe the route to the greater good is through the individual's intuition. The greater good is not a bad thing, but the route getting there is what can be evil. Who made these people in charge that decide what the greater good is? How do they? They're not omniscient. I think we all have the intuition to know better of how to reach the greater good collectively as individuals.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for that, Andreas.
Yeah.
And,
you're welcome.
Yeah, very good point.
One more call here. We can squeeze in, I hope. Bruce wants to talk about the new county order. Bruce?
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that under the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution,
the purpose of our government is purportedly to protect the natural rights or the unalienable rights of all of us. Mm. But now we have something else that has entered into the picture, and we have local officials who have all taken an oath to the Constitution who are directly violating our personal rights. They're destroying people's businesses, and they are impeding people's freedom of association, their freedom to travel, and making them supposedly stay home. But all of these orders are counter to the Constitution and our purported method of government.
Yeah.
And so all of these orders are counter, they are directly illegal under Marbury versus Madison, and they are also, they've been ruled repeatedly by federal courts.
Did the Constitution say anything about medical emergencies?
Medical emergencies do not change the lawful rights of the citizens or change normal legislation or the powers of government. And that has been repeatedly ruled by the federal courts.
Oh, could so I just say something that I thought was really brilliant, contributed by Danny Sheehan last week, where he just talked about a legal framework that allows us to really have all of the arguments out on the table for our consideration. And in the legal system, you have what's called a strict scrutiny test, four levels of tests to derive whether or not an edict or a law will violate the Constitution or not. And the four steps of a law that is passed, first of all, you have to ask if the government has a legitimate interest for enacting the law. And if they do have a legitimate interest, then you have to ask, does it infringe on rights that are fundamentally protected? And then if it does infringe on rights that are fundamentally protected, is the law overly broad? Or is it narrow enough to keep with the goal, which I would say is where most of the issues are with this particular situation? And if it is narrow enough to apply to the goal, is there a bias where someone gets benefit in an unequal way? And so if we could have that kind of approach, I'd say all of the voices on all sides of this issue could come to the table and we wouldn't be at each other's throats. So
yeah, I think that that is true, but these rules, so-called rules, definitely violate people's natural rights, and accordingly, under Marbury versus Madison, they are null and void ab initio. And not only that, all of the public officials, so-called, who have issued these orders and rules are personally liable for the damage that they have created, both civilly and criminally.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so if there are 20 current COVID cases that are costing the medical system $1 million each, that $20 million of income for someone because of this law has to be weighed against the multiple millions of dollars of income that is lost from the millions of people who are not allowed to work right now. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Bruce.
You bet.
Yeah, this is Ellie. I'd like to jump in really quick here and point something out.
We have 30 seconds, Ellie.
30
okay.
seconds.
Okay. So I'd like to remind everyone that we are the committee to reopen Santa Cruz to save lives. I'm here to represent the committee, and we are having our fifth beach day this Saturday, May 30th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Cowles Beach. Will be peaceful civil disobedience. The reason we have Save Lives in our name is because that's exactly what we're trying to do. I'm not sure if anyone's seen the article.
And the show
but,
is over. Thank you.
A year's worth of
over
the last month.
Ah, okay.
KSU Santa Cruz.
Three to five Saturday at Cowell Beach. Three to six Saturday at Cowell Beach.
All right, people.
All right.
Be safe. Exercise your rights.